Blog Talk Radio.
About golf injuries. Why? Oh, I'm sick of talking about injuries on this 78-degree humid day. But look, here we are. Like it or not, here we are, Rory McIlroy. On the shelf for an undetermined length of time due to rupturing his ankle. Wow. Running, playing soccer. I said to somebody yesterday after the Jason Pierre-Paul issue with fireworks, I said, if I was a professional athlete, I would play golf and hang out. That's it. Play golf. Now, yes, you can also turn ankle playing golf. I know, freak injuries happen. But play golf, have fun with friends, and just know that my time doing this is finite. My time at the peak of my craft, which is what Rory was, and still is. The peak of my craft, I can't be spending my time doing this dangerous stuff. Tiger is at equal risk for this, folks. Tiger plays a lot of soccer with his kids, and while his previous issues don't have him running, look, he's at risk for this. And it's scary. It's really scary what other golfers do. And I would seriously, if I was a professional athlete, non-golfer or golfer, I would seriously consider curtailing my life and my prime just to make sure I'd be okay. I know it's crazy. I know that can send you into some habits that you probably shouldn't get into as a result of needing something. But I would find my something. You can do a lot of good in society, a lot of good charity work, that way while trying to conserve your prime. And look, there's a reason why Eli Manning and Peyton Manning and Tom Brady have done some great things. That's because they're all golfers. They're not like Russell Wilson, looking at baseball and other places where some athletes look in the off season. I really don't know why Rory did this. I know he likes playing soccer. I know he obviously ran around a bit with David Faraday on Faraday a couple of years ago, and I get it. I get that you have to have a life. I get that you need to be able to unwind, but, here we are. It's over a week before the third major of the year where you're the defending champion and you hurt yourself like this. It's a shame. I wish it wasn't the case for Rory McIlroy. I hope he gets back soon. He has not ruled himself officially out. I hope that he's able to play in the end. But what a shame that a golfer in his prime who had successfully avoided an injury now gets one. And the left ankle is your load ankle. When you come through on impact, I twisted my right ankle in the pro shop at the Rutgers golf course 2 weeks ago. I was very lucky I didn't injure anything more and I was okay to play. But that's your load ankle. All your weight, when you come through at impact and then in your forward swing, all your weight gets transferred from your back foot to your front foot, and your front foot and your front leg are your load legs. And very scary. It is very scary, and we hope the best for Rory McIlroy. Get back soon. Jordan Spieth's path to the Grand Slam, however, did potentially get a bit easier. We'll see what happens as we get into next week. Seth Rothman joins us. Next to talk hockey, this is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. We're back in 30 seconds.
Sometimes tough isn't enough.
Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
Welcome back to Teeing It Up. We welcome in InsideHockey.com's Seth Rothman, covers the Rangers. Look, you're in locker rooms every day. You're around guys who are being paid a lot of money from teams and sponsors to stay healthy in the off season. Would you, if you were a professional athlete, engage in something like soccer with friends that could potentially hurt yourself? I mean, Rory called it a kickabout, which made it seem like it was casual and it was non-contact, just running straight, and he twisted his ankle and did this. Would you engage in dangerous activities if you were an athlete in the off season?
Well, Jeremy, first of all, thanks for having me on. You know what? I kind of disagree with you, actually, on this. I think it's up to the athlete. These guys are getting paid a lot of money. They have a lot of money at stake. If they want to be dumb enough to do something that can get them injured, if they want to shoot off fireworks and burn their hands when they're a professional NFL player, if they want to play soccer when they're a golfer, if they want to play basketball when they're a baseball player, they need to understand that they are at risk of losing a lot of money when they do that. But that's their choice. Do they have a responsibility to their team? Yes, but their team is paying them a lot of money, and their team can cancel that contract if you do something silly like this. Now, obviously, in golf, it's a little bit different. I don't think he's losing quite as much money as a team athlete is, but, you know, it's up to these guys. They've got to be smart, and obviously McIlroy, you know, we don't know exactly what he was doing there, but, you know, that stuff does seem to happen. You also tend to feel like, Jeremy, if you're an athlete, you kind of feel like, you know what, I can play soccer without getting hurt. Obviously, this time it didn't quite happen that way.
No. It's just, God, I'm just sick of doing monologues about golf injuries. I'd be much happier doing monologues about on-course play. Let's start with expansion, because I forgot to talk about it with you last time, or maybe we did and we set this up. The NHL has always been thought of as the fourth of the big four. I think its profile and its flight in this country has improved over the last 10 years, rule changes. 2010 Olympics obviously had an impact on that. Now they want to expand. Do you think the NHL is healthy enough to expand?
Yes, I do. And I think it's healthy enough because, frankly, they're going to make a lot of money off this, Jeremy. They're going to make a lot of money off this. Gary Bettman has already come out and said, if you want an NHL team, it's going to cost you at least $500 million. And the NHL, it is as clear as day, the NHL fully intends to expand to Las Vegas. I would expect that it will be a lot more than $500 million for Bill Foley's Las Vegas team. It is going to provide the NHL a huge amount of money. And listen, Las Vegas may not be a traditional hockey market. They've done very well in their season ticket drive. They've I think, got 15,000 or 12,000 or 13,000, somewhere in there, a huge amount of season tickets that have been bought for a team that isn't even there yet. So they're doing very well. None of that, by the way, was used with casinos or big businesses. That was all private citizens. And you're going to put an NHL team on the Las Vegas Strip. I've been on the Las Vegas Strip, Jeremy. It is a very expensive place. You go to the Las Vegas Strip, you are parting with a lot of money, and it is going to ticket prices on the Las Vegas Strip are going to be hugely expensive. They might end up being some of the top five most expensive arenas in the NHL. So that team is going to make a lot of money. Whether or not they have a rabid fan base doesn't even matter. That team is going to make an enormous amount of money, and again, that money that that team makes goes into hockey-related revenue, means that the salary cap is going to go up, means that the NHL is going to do well. Maybe you put another team in Seattle. Maybe you put another team in Quebec City. There's a lot of different choices here. We're going to find out because that process began today.
Let me ask you this question, because I think there's some fans who, right around when this announcement happened, they heard about the issues in Glendale and thought, hold on a second, that team could be in trouble. Maybe they should go to Vegas and the NHL shouldn't expand. What's up with the Coyotes? Are they leaving, or is this more of a local issue?
Well, I think it's more of a local issue. I don't think they are leaving. The NHL seems very committed to Glendale and to Arizona. I could see them moving to Phoenix. I could see them moving out of that arena and moving out of that town, which is does not appear to be very well run from the outside, at least when it comes to the NHL team in their town. But no, I think the NHL is going to stay there. There was one report in the New York Times, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, that the team in Arizona was going to move to Las Vegas. I don't think that's going to happen. And again, the reason is a team in Seattle, as an example, if that city would like a team, they might pay $500 million. Well, a team in Las Vegas, the expansion fee is going to be a lot greater than that. There is no expansion fee if you get a relocated team. So the NHL is not going to relocate a team to Las Vegas because they want that expansion money, which is going to be much higher in Las Vegas than it will be in any other city that the NHL is thinking about. So if that Arizona team moves, I don't think they're going to move to Las Vegas. I think it would be to another team. It would be to a Seattle. It would be to a Kansas City. Maybe to a Quebec City, although, again, I think the Las Vegas rule applies in Quebec City, applies to a second team in Toronto if they decide to go that route. So, personally, I think there will be hockey in Arizona, whether it's in Glendale, whether it's in Phoenix, Scottsdale, who knows. But I think they're going to stay in that state.
I'm glad you mentioned Toronto because that I saw that and was kind of confused too. I know Toronto loves their hockey. I know where I know that's where the NHL is based. Is there really a market there for a second team?
Oh my God, absolutely, Jeremy. Oh, absolutely. I mean, listen. If New York can have three teams, and yes, I count Newark as being a New York market. If New York can have three teams, can have two teams in neighboring boroughs. I think absolutely. Toronto could probably have four teams. That is a market that is completely hockey crazed. You look at their media there. You look at just everything that goes into it. Yes, I think Toronto would easily be able to have a second team. I mean, look, New York can even have a second, you know, soccer team. So if soccer can do two teams in one city, I think without question, the birthplace of hockey, Toronto, can easily have two teams.
Interesting. Talking to Seth Rossman from InsideHockey.com. All right, free agency and trades. Coming into this, you thought the Rangers needed to do what?
I thought they needed to get some more forward depth. I thought they were a little bit weak in their bottom six, and I would have liked to see them get a little bit better there. So far, they really haven't done that. I have not loved their offseason to date. Again, there's so little room to maneuver under the salary cap that there wasn't much they could have done. Trading Hagelin was one move that they made, obviously, bringing in Emerson Edom. I like Edom as a player. He's young. He's cheaper. Not sure that that's an upgrade. The Cam Talbot trade, they might have overplayed their hand a bit. One interesting thing, I think they're going to go into training camp, generally speaking, with this team. They'll sign Stepan. I don't think they're going to trade Stepan. I think that would be a ridiculous move. What I think will happen with this Rangers team is they have a defense prospect by the name of Brady Shea, who played for the University of Minnesota last year and played for Hartford in the postseason last year in the AHL. If Shea is ready to go, and if he proves during training camp that he can be an NHL player, I think the Rangers will end up trading Kevin Klein for either a forward or for salary relief if they need it, and that's how they'll get themselves under the salary cap, and that's how they'll get themselves some more forward depth. But I think Stepan, there's been a lot of talk that they might have to trade him. because of what his cap hit's going to be. I think they'll be okay there. We should be hearing shortly that the Rangers are sending a few players to arbitration. That news should be coming shortly. So, you know, I don't know that they have improved their team, which could be a concern because a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference, and especially in the Metropolitan Division, have improved their team, and I don't think the Rangers have.
Alkner, Seth Rothman. Seth, the Cam Talbot trade, it's almost like they were setting up themselves with this huge chip, and now it's, you know, come to us and give us your best offer here. Two things. Number one, have the fans on your feet finally fallen back in love with Henrik Lundqvist, because I know they were starting to hate him kind of towards in the playoffs.
There was a vocal minority that was anti-Lundqvist. I have not heard a lot of that once the playoffs began. Lundqvist was unbelievable. Might have been his best postseason ever. Deserved a better fate than he got. I think fans are back on board. I think all fans are back on board the Henrik Lundqvist trend.
All right, so with that being said now, what would you have done with Cam Talbot and kind of take us through what they actually did with Cam Talbot?
Well, they got some picks for Talbot. They got what they could out of him. I think they might have overplayed their hand. I think they were trying to figure out a way to get into the first round. There was a rumor that if they wanted into the first round, the team was going to make them take a bad contract in exchange for that first-round pick. And in exchange for trading Talbot away. And that was obviously a non-starter. That was a poison pill. So the Rangers wanted to get into the first round. What they really, I think, needed to do was they needed to be the first goaltending shoe to drop. And once another goaltender was traded, that softened the market up, and they couldn't get as much as they thought they were going to for him. I thought the possibility existed that they might try and package Talbot with Kevin Klein. That did not happen. I think what they're probably waiting to do with Klein, and I mentioned this earlier, is wait and see if Shea's ready. And if Shea can go, if Shea is NHL ready in training camp, I think they trade Klein then. But, ultimately they got what they could. They got a couple of draft picks. In 4 years we'll look back and see if that was a good trade or a not-so-good trade.
There are days where I see your feed and other feeds of Ranger fans, and it appears that Tanner Glass is the most hated person on the planet. I feel like Ranger fans would be, some Ranger fans would kiss you and hug you and do dances around Glenn Sather, and now the replacement to Glenn Sather if Tanner Glass got moved. Why do people dislike Tanner Glass?
Well, Tanner Glass... there's a lot of new advanced metrics, which I've gotten myself into here lately, that basically intimate that Tanner Glass might be the worst player currently in the NHL. His possession numbers are bad. He's kind of a possession anchor. He drags down the teammates that are on the line with him. So he does not do a lot of things that are measured in these advanced metrics. Now, does he do some other things that the team likes? Yes. I think his breed of toughness is a dying breed in the NHL. I don't think you need a fighter in the NHL anymore. The Rangers, I think, only had 15 fights in the entire season, something like that. So you really don't need those guys anymore. I don't know what the plan for Tanner Glass is. Moving forward here, the Rangers would seem to have enough forwards now that he might end up being a healthy scratch. Although he was not a healthy scratch very often last season, so it's unclear whether that would actually happen. But, it's his possession numbers that really do it for a lot of fans. And he is responsible defensively. He's a good penalty killer. But unfortunately, he just does not do enough offensively for fans to really be on his side.
Speaking of Glenn Sather, he stepped aside. Was that a surprise?
Not really. We knew it was coming at some point. It was a surprise that it happened on July 1st. It was really funny because Rangers PR sends out these press releases at 1 o'clock. Rangers president and general manager Glenn Sather announces And then 15 minutes later, Rangers general manager Jeff Gorton announces. So, you know, I think we knew who was in charge during this free agency period. It was not Glenn Sather. It was Jeff Gorton. He is a very highly regarded executive. He was somebody that the Bruins, among other teams, wanted to talk to for open general manager positions throughout the rest of the NHL, and the Rangers would not allow him to talk to any other team. So this has been in the works for quite some time. Glenn kind of dropped a hint to Larry Brooks of the Post a couple of weeks ago that he might be thinking about retiring. So, no, it was not a major surprise that it happened. It was just a surprise, I think, that it happened on the day of free agency opening up.
You've talked about this before. We've talked a lot about James Dolan and the differences in how he runs the Knicks and the Rangers. It seems like this was Glenn's decision, and this really didn't have anything to do with James Dolan. It seems like he really kind of let Sather make the call that he wanted to make. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, Glenn has a contract for life. I think that's pretty much been decided upon at the Garden. And listen, the way the team has performed over the last three or four seasons, I think Glenn had every right to make that decision when he wanted to make it. So he made it. Jeff Gorton is a more than capable general manager. He will do just fine. And that's really all there is to it. I mean, it's not a big surprise. It's just sort of, Glenn is getting up there in age, and, it was time to make a change, and that's what they did.
Other free agent signings, trades, the Phil Kessel one was obviously a big one. Stuff that you thought and took notice of, plus the draft, you know, teams that you thought moved forward, teams that moved backwards.
You know what? I'll be honest with you. I don't like what Pittsburgh did here. They have Kessel, which is, that is a great player. And I think Phil Kessel has been maligned in Toronto. I'm happy for him that he's able to get out of there. But you look at Pittsburgh's salary cap situation, it's kind of a nightmare between Malkin, Crosby, Kessel, a defenseman, Chris Letang, and goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury. They have about $32 million of salary cap space tied up in those five players. That's almost 50%. You can't build a team that way. That is a very difficult way to win, is by having a team that's that top heavy. They will be, it will be possible to defend against them when you only have three players that are really top echelon players. A team that I like what they've done, I think Columbus is going to be an impact player next season. Brandon Saad, that was a great trade for them. That was a team that was maligned by injuries. They really never got their season started last year. I think they finished 11-1-1 in their last 13, 14 games. It was something, like that. I think it was 12-1-1. That's a team that I think is going to make waves in the NHL this season. And as for Edmonton, they get the number one pick. They get Connor McDavid in. That is a team with a ton of young talent. That is a team bursting at the seams with talent. Do I think they're a playoff team this season? No. Do I think they are building something really special out there? Absolutely. They have some talent. They now have a great coach. They have a GM that's much better than what they had in the past. And on the ice, I think it's a team that has a lot of depth. Up front, it's a team that is building a nice defense, and it's a team that if they can get some defense, I think their goaltending will be good enough too. So I'm interested by what they're doing. I can't wait to watch Connor McDavid play. I think that's going to be a really fun team to watch.
I'm talking to Seth Rossman from InsideHockey.com. Is this the best young draft class, obviously with Eichel and McDavid up top, that you've seen in your lifetime of watching soccer? Hockey, where does this rank for you? How about for soccer? How about these guys playing soccer?
Yeah, they play soccer as they warm up. They play soccer together.
Exactly.
This is up there. This is really good. And I think one thing that was neat to watch, and I wrote an article about this during the course of the regular season, was how many college hockey players were highly thought of in this draft. And that's another sign of hockey's continued growth in the United States. Yes, you had Connor McDavid go at number one. Hey, Jack Eichel's a Boston product. Noah Hanifin, Zach Werenski. I mean, you had a lot of these guys who were top 10 prospects in the NHL draft here who were college hockey players and who were American. I think it was the most college hockey players drafted in the first round. A ton of Americans were taken in the opening round. So what we're seeing is we're not necessarily seeing the best talent. I mean, Connor McDavid is a generational guy. Jack Eichel's going to be a very good hockey player. But we're seeing more depth trickle in, and we're seeing more Americans trickle in, and we're seeing the game continue to grow south of the Canadian border, and that's obviously a fantastic thing for hockey.
Finally, Mr. Rothman, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game is next week on Fox. You can see who will have Game 7 of the World Series at home. What is your favorite All-Star Game and why?
Well, you know, it is the MLB All-Star Game because it's the only one that actually resembles a regular season game. You know, the NHL All-Star Game is a joke. The NBA All-Star Game is a joke. The NFL All-Star Game is a joke. I've never watched an MLS All-Star Game. I can't tell you if that's a joke or not. But the baseball All-Star Game, you know, baseball is a game that you can't fake baseball. Either you're playing or you're not. And so the baseball All-Star Game, the rules are silly. You know, the substitutions are kind of silly. But that being said, when you get down to brass tacks, it's the game that most resembles its regular season sport. And that's why I think a lot of people like it.
All right, I got to ask you, did Adam Wainwright groove one to Mr. Jeter last year?
I don't care. You know what? I don't care. It was a great moment. You could ask the same about Jeter's final Yankee Stadium hit, and my answer is, you know what? He still has to hit it. It's still a bat meeting a ball, and that's still a very difficult thing to do. So whether a pitch was grooved or not, whether it was a fastball right down the middle, I don't care. I really don't care.
Look, he had to make the pitch, you know, going back to the last game of the year for Jeter. Look, I mean, you've got eye on second. You're trying to close the game. He that's a bad pitch. I mean, that's what it is. You know, that's a situation where he's clearly not trying to groove one because he's trying to win the ball game.
But again, even if he was, Jeremy, you still have to hit it. And you still have to not only hit it, but you still have to find a hole. The baseball was still coming in at 91 miles an hour? He still has to hit that. So whether it's, you know, grooved or not is something I don't get into that. I don't think that matters.
Are you a fan of the new NHL overtime?
Yes, I am. I was not before I saw what happened in the AHL. I'll give you some stats really fast. I know you're light on time. Two seasons ago in the NHL, in the AHL, 25% of games went to overtime, 15% of games went to a shootout. Last year in the AHL, they had 4 minutes. They had 3 minutes 4-on-4, 4 minutes 3-on-3. 25% of games went to overtime, 5% of games went to a shootout. So they dramatically reduced the amount of games that went to a shootout. I expect the same thing in the NHL.
Interesting. We shall see what happens. It'll be interesting to see how it takes off and how it's received by the greater fan base, both diehards and by casuals. In 30 seconds or less, would you have taken the AHL model of some at 4-on-4 and then some at 3-on-3?
I like that model. The players did not want to add that much time to the games. You know, 2 minutes time, however many games go to overtime, that's more hockey that they have to play. The players that did not want it, so whether I wanted to or not, it wasn't up to me.
There you go. Seth Rothman, InsideHockey.com, plus the guy who answers my oddball questions. Thank you, sir, for coming on Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schoen.
My pleasure as always, buddy. Take care.
To all the athletes listening, be safe. Don't do stuff that'll hurt next week on Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schoen. Have a good night, everybody.